Hi, everyone, and welcome to Four Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic novel, graphic literature, and just general entertainment, because we're entertaining people, aren't we, Andrew?
No, I disagree. We're incredibly dull. Stop listening.
My name's Rob, and obviously over there is Andrew. We are without a Mick, and we don't even have a Rob today, so we're back to just me and Andrew, which is, it's been a while.
AKA the dream team.
Andrew is feeling a little under the weather, so we're going to crack straight on.
Yes, that's a good, it's not Rob and Andrew, it's Rob and like half an Andrew.
Well, actually, it seems like there's more than like a complete Andrew, because...
That's true, we also have the giant pile of phlegm that I'm bringing with me.
Exactly. Anyway, we have our first official image of David Harbour in his role as Hellboy. And yeah, that's definitely the Hellboy look he's got going on, isn't it?
Yeah, but that is a Hellboy.
Thing is, I don't know. Because, okay, he looks the part, but that's all the makeup. But how does he sound?
Yeah, that's kind of a bit of a worry now for me. Is that he looks so much like Hellboy, it's going to be super weird not hearing Ron Perlman's voice.
Yeah, that's my point. And I don't know what David Harbour sounds like. I can't remember his voice, but I'm sure I'll recognise it when I hear it. But my main concern is, because I don't recognise his voice, I'm imagining like the high-pitched noises that a seven-year-old girl makes. So he's like wandering around going, "Take that, monster! Take that! Bang, bang!"
Or even better, he sounds exactly like Steve Buscemi.
Oh, God, no. Oh, that would be horrible. And what if he sounded like Trump?
Oh no. I mean, I know they are both, like, on the same scale of redness.
Donald Hellboy Trump.
But yeah, apart from that, he looks good.
Yes, he does. He looks very good. He's got the muscles in all the right places. He's not like 90s DC Comics.
But can you imagine if someone did that for, like, a superhero film, just, like, got the prosthetics to make a Rob Liefeld superhero?
Didn't they do that already? I think they did that in some of the 90s DC films.
I mean, literally the only 90s DC film I can think of is Steel with Shaq. That was a real film.
I know. Oh, you would have to remind me of that film.
So sad, cause sometimes I'll sit there and think, God, I wish some of like my favourite minor DC characters would get a film. And then I realise one of them did.
Just not the film
and
you wanted.
Very not good.
Yes. It was very not good. But I am hopeful about the new Hellboy reboot, because it is a reboot, because Mike Mignola he's got a very big part to play in the actual writing of the story for the movie. So, you know, I am hopeful.
Yeah, like I've got to, initially I was very disappointed that they wouldn't be continuing the Del Toro Hellboy films.
Yeah.
But now part of me is kind of excited that maybe they can do something a bit closer to the comics.
Yeah, I'm the same. I do hope that as well. And the thing is, Del Toro's films were great. You know, I enjoyed them a lot. I especially loved Hellboy 2 and the song.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I loved those films.
Yeah.
Just, I also do love the Hellboy comics.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, Hellboy is just, here's a tip. Folks, right, if you are into comics and you've not read Hellboy, then you should go back, find Hellboy from the beginning and start reading it. It's not, you know, the stories are quite often they're standalone stories.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't even really need to start from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Just by, like, any random Hellboy graphic novel.
Exactly. But I guarantee you, if you like your dark horror and supernatural-based comics with a hero who is more real, but looks completely unreal, but is in essence more real than most of the heroes that you see in comics. Because he is, isn't he? You know, he doesn't have Superman's powers or Batman's detective nous or anything like that. He doesn't have like any real martial arts ability. He's just a big red guy with a stone hand and a gun.
Yeah, his main superpower is he has a very big fist and is good at punching things.
Yeah, and that's why his tagline is, after he's basically gone toe-to-toe with, 15 rounds toe-to-toe with some big monster, "I'm going to be sore in the morning," because usually he is. You know, you never hear Batman say anything like that, do you?
No, mainly because, like, he's too busy drinking a pint of glass shards and go, oh, can I do it with a sore throat? Be like, I am the knight. See, this is the best part of a chest infection. On point Batman infections.
You sound more Batman than Batman.
I am dark and brooding, but also what I need is a 10-year-old in pyjamas to help me.
See, now you're making it sound
Robin,
more like...
wear these bright colours so that everyone shoots at you and not me.
Now it's starting to sound more like that Nine Inch Nails song. More human than human.
Also, I have a little bit more Hellboy news.
Oh?
There's also Ben Daimio, who was cast as Ed Skrein, and there was that whole controversy, whatchamacallit.
Oh, the whitewashing thing.
Yep. So since he's stepped down, he's now been replaced by Daniel Day Kim.
All right.
Which, solid choice.
Yeah, good choice, good call. So
Daniel Day Kim was rad in Lost. I assume will be rad in this.
I should hope so. Right, moving on then from Hellboy to... there's going to be a Nightwing movie. We know about this, right? And Chris McKay is going to direct the movie, and he's come out and said, the Nightwing movie will have action and heart, and it's going to be badass.
Which I disagree with, because if the picture they've chosen for CBR proves anything, it's that it's going to be a great ass.
I know. I'm sorry, but CBR, what are you doing?
It's not even CBR, it's like the entire internet.
I know.
Dick Grayson's like one defining characteristic is dad ass.
I know.
And let me tell you, it is very defining.
It really is. I saw this story and then I saw the picture and I thought, what the hell? Oh, if you want to know what we're talking about, Google Nightwing movie and just look at the pictures that they've chosen. Or Nightwing movie badass and the pictures.
Why don't you just Google Nightwing?
I don't know, because then you'll end up with like a load of Nightwing Starfire fan fiction. Which didn't really need the fan fiction, because DC seemed bound and determined to tell all the fan fiction.
It is very much fiction.
I mean, it just seemed like every time DC had like the Teen Titans or, you know, the Titans, or just had Nightwing and Starfire in the same comic or in their own comics, they seemed bound and determined to take all of the fan fiction stories and put them in so that, you know, Dick would be with Starfire and Starfire would be with Nightwing, because I can't release it the other way. Starfire would be with Dick.
Oh, don't worry. The comics have already made that joke.
I know. And
like, I think there's one issue where literally it begins with just a woman screaming out, Dick!
Oh, no. It gets even worse than that, because I think in DC Comics, Dick and Corey broke up for a little bit, or rather, they were really good friends, but they weren't together. And Starfire basically went on some weird cross-country sleep with as many men as possible thing.
Which, I mean, to be fair, Dick Grayson has done the exact same thing, but like every woman in the DC universe.
Really?
Oh yeah, really.
Diana?
But probably.
Diana's mum?
Probably as well. Look, here's how bad it got. You know Young Justice, the cartoon series?
Yeah.
The cartoon series ostensibly for children. There's an issue of the Time comic about how big of a man slut Dick Grayson is.
Oh, God. Hang on. Did they turn Dick Grayson into 90s She-Hulk?
I mean, I think he's like been like that for a while.
Or was he worse?
Possibly worse.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this is our calling in life. Which comic book character sleeps around the most?
Yes.
We need lists, damn it. We need... hard data. Hard data.
Yes, I'm sure we do.
Also, I'd like to point out that as part of my human rights to free speech, you can't cut that joke out of this podcast.
Oh, anyway, yes, the Nightwing movie is apparently going to be badass, not dat-ass.
But also because I got a bit confused.
Yeah.
That there was kind of part of this story that confused me. There's going to be a Nightwing movie.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
You didn't know? I thought everyone knew.
No. I mean, to be fair, it's hard to keep track of the DC movies. It's like, is this going to be in the DCEU or is it going to be another standalone one?
See, every time you say the DCEU, I'm just thinking DCEU.
Which, I mean, is a pretty good way of summing it up.
Exactly.
And then also, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, but Wonder Woman isn't... Yeah. DCEU. Yeah, you're right. Although that does make us sound like spooky ghosts.
it's okay. Diana will protect us from the spooky ghosts.
Yes. But yeah, there is a Nightwing movie. I don't know if it's going to be part of the DCEU. It's maybe, according to Chris McKay, it's going to be a bleeping badass action movie with lots of with a lot of heart and emotion. It's going to be a crazy fun ride. Whoever gets cast as Nightwing and any of the other actors around are going to go through a bleeping boot camp experience because it's going to be a lot. So that doesn't inspire confidence in me, Chris McKay, the fact that you have to resort to those particular phrases to describe a movie that you haven't even made yet.
No, I think he's being literal. Is it they're going to decide the actor based on who can do it the best?
Then it's got to be Channing Tatum. I've seen Magic Mike.
But that's just his entire audition. Just slaps down a copy of going Magic Mike and going, mm-hmm.
Yes. That is literally the audition. I can see it right now. Oh, and I got his name right.
You did. Well done. That is possibly not even four panel, an entire Geek Show podcast network first.
Yeah, I got his name right first time. On the first thing, I said Channing Tatum, not Chaiting Nanum. Chinambundantum or whatever, I don't know. So, yes. And not Canning Taters either.
But here's the real question.
What?
Is Schrodinger's actor Ben Affleck going to be in it?
Ooh. Well, when you get right down to it, right?
Well, when you get right down to it, the answer is he'll simultaneously be and not be in the film. Yeah. Just like Batman.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think Ben Affleck has actually nailed the performance. I think he's got it down to a fine art. Because we don't know if he's going to be Batman or not. But by the same token, the characters in the DCEU, most of them aren't even sure if the Batman is real or not.
Yes, he is actually Batman.
Yes,
no one knows if he's going to be on the set film. He'll just like show up on set one day, and then when you turn around, he's gone again.
Exactly. And I think that he's inhabiting the role completely.
He is the knight.
Yes. Anyway, moving on to Flash Season 4. And normally we don't talk about The Flash because it kind of got stupid. And every season seemed to have somebody fast as the enemy. But this time, they're introducing something with a bit more of an Eastern promise.
I see what you did there, Rob.
Yes.
I'm not sure I approve of it, but I see what you did.
Well, Eastern Promise could either be Turkish Delight, because that was the advert full of Eastern Promise, wasn't it?
Much like Turkey itself, that promise was a dirty lie.
Yes. But yeah, Barry Allen is going to have a beard in Season 4 of The Flash, and I'm not sure...
Can we just stop it there? Can that be the news story?
No, that can't be the news story, because I haven't told you the name of the bad guy.
But surely the second most impressive piece of DC facial hair-related news.
Yes, it is. After Henry Cavill's mustache, that is.
Yeah.
Anyway, some of the bad guys in Season 4 of Flash are going to be a horde. Well, they say a horde, but I'm not sure if it's going to be a horde. I don't think it's going to be a horde in kind of the Mongol sense of the horde.
I mean, knowing the show's budget, a horde is like 5.
Yeah, it's probably going to be 5. And there's going to be more than one robot samurai called Samuroids. They are part of an army of mechanical warriors constructed by the Japanese criminal, or Japanese supervillain, Baron Katana.
Baron Katana?
Yes.
That's not a right name.
My point exactly. Now you see why I said...
For stars, this is Japan. You don't have barons in Japan.
Now you see why I wanted
you...
You
like Daimyo.
Yes.
Katana.
Baron Katana is the name. Apparently it's a character from 1968, and that immediately made me think, oh my god.
This character isn't from the 21st century.
No, this character was created in 1968, and that immediately made me think, oh my god, this is like, it's as if somebody suddenly took Sean Connery, gave him the James Bond role again, and took him back to Japan.
Yeah, I mean, a thing I saw today is like, an old Invaders panel of Namor saying, like, I'll just push my lips back and slant my eyes and I'll look just like a Japanese man.
Yep.
This is an industry I'm not surprised has a character called Baron Katana.
Yep. Oh, so, yeah.
With his henchman Archduke Sushi.
No, his henchmen are the Samuroids, Baron Katana, and the thing is, when you say Baron Katana and the Samuroids, it sounds like a band. It sounds like one of those crappy bands that you see at the pub on a Saturday.
But his first name is like Honda, Baron Honda Katana.
Isn't that like Honda's next 4x4? It cuts through mud, like anything, like nobody's business.
And it's also incredibly brittle.
Yes. But yeah, the Samuroids are described as virtually indestructible, although of course they can be, and ultimately are destroyed, and they are formidable opponents.
Well, thanks for spoiling the story, Rob.
No. They are formidable opponents equipped with jetpacks, nearly impenetrable armor, electrified swords, and in some instances, flaming arrows. Now, I would like to bring up a point. Samurai armor wasn't impenetrable. Samurai swords, although very good, if you're equipping an army, then you probably don't use hand-forged, top-of-the-line samurai swords. And if they're electrified, then that actually would weaken the metal, because you're passing an electric current through the metal, which ultimately degrades it over time. And the flaming arrows are just flaming arrows. I'm sure Flash can outrun flaming arrows.
I mean, you would think after you put all the time and effort into making an army of robots, you just give them guns.
Exactly. That's my point.
But then again, I guess, like, when life has handed you the name Baron Katana, you've got to stick with the theme.
When life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
Exactly, because, like, if you're just some dude who's made a bunch of killer robots, and you're a Japanese man called Baron Katana, then it's racist. It's really bad and racist.
Oh my god.
But no, it's okay, because it's just in theme.
Is this DC's version of Doctor Doom? Because Doctor Doom had his Doombots, so it would literally be Doctor Doom and the Doombots. That would be their oh my god, it's DC Marvel Battle of the Bands. Baron Katana and the Samuroids versus Doctor Doom and the Doombots.
Yeah, it's basically Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
If Doctor Doom was named by one of the Marvel writers, thinking of the first thing related to Eastern Europe and, like, naming him that, like, Baron, Dr. Sauerkraut.
Dr. Oktoberfest. Why
Dr.
don't we have
crippling
that?
Crippling poverty.
No, why don't we have that as a supervillain, Dr. Oktoberfest? He just goes around giving all the superheroes free drinks and getting them hammered.
Well, no, we do. It's what happens when Otto Octavius has a few too many.
Just goes around getting the superheroes hammered and then feeding them sausages until they explode.
Oh, no, Rob. I think we saved that one for the Nightwing movie.
Oh, Dr. Doom's Oktoberfest would be a sight to see.
Would it be even better than Dr. Doom's exploding sausage?
Yeah. Well, it'd be a more politically correct version of it, I think.
Baron Katana.
I know. That's the reaction I wanted. That's why I didn't tell you the name. Anyway, we've got one more piece of news. Marvel have teased the debut, and I use this term very loosely, of a new character named Voyager, and they've offered no other information other than the promise of more information on September the 29th.
I think it's a step up. They've got actual character art instead of just, like, a black box with some words on it.
Yeah. But Voyager is a name that's been used several times in Marvel history. There was the Shi'ar Imperial Guardsman, and there was a new universe hero, and even the titular character in Marvel UK's short-lived Children of the Voyager series. And so I'm not sure who this Voyager is going to be.
I mean, if you said that, I reckon then she could easily be the new universe one.
Yeah.
Because I know recently Marvel have been, like, folding in a lot of their new universe is hard to say. I don't like it.
Yes.
It's too hard a word for a stupid comic book brand that lasted like a year and then died.
Exactly. But yeah, I do think that it may be the new universe one. Although if suddenly, you know, they turn around and say, oh, she's Catherine Janeway, then I'd be worried.
Yes, that's it. We're finally getting that sequel to X-Men Meet Star Trek.
X-Men meets Voyager. Wrong Voyager. We don't want you. go back to the new universe.
I mean, do we really want that Voyager either?
Well, it had a couple of good episodes. I mean, like one or two over, what was it, 7 years now? It wasn't a great series, was it?
That's not a fantastic average.
And if you had a baseball player or a cricketer with a batting average like that, they would not make the team. So, yeah, Voyager or... I'm going to keep the Star Trek references going. Voyager or V'ger to go with the first Star Trek movie. Because that also had a Voyager, didn't it?
Did. But anyway, I can't wait for Voyager to be introduced and then like shoved into every single Marvel comic for like 3 months and then forgotten about and never talked about again.
Yes. So, yeah. On that note, we are going to take a break and forget Voyager exists until the end of September. And...
I do quite like a costume, though.
Her costume just looks kind of generic to me, with a big V and the belt.
See, I kind of like it because it's not like the over-designed power armor thing that a lot of characters seem to have now.
Oh, God, yeah, I hate that. That annoys the crap out of me. I mean...
That once again, like, you stopped yourself from saying the swear word and then just said it anyway.
Yeah. The thing that I don't understand about her costume, right, is... She kind of looks like she's, except for the shoulder pads, which I'm not sure about. I don't think they work, so you might want to change them. She looks like she's on her way to some kind of flashy business meeting.
Maybe that's her entire character.
Oh, is she like the businesswoman of the year for the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, by day, she's a high-powered executive, but by night, she's also a high-powered executive.
With the emphasis on high-powered.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And yellow. I don't understand the yellow as well. Why yellow?
It's a colour in it.
Yeah, but it doesn't go with the rest of it. Makes it look like some weird weird cosmic bumblebee.
Nah. No. Yellow. It's a colour of custard. I like custard.
Yes. Custard is good. On that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a few moments with some comics.
Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literally Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literally Loitering.
Welcome back, and now it's time for comics, and we're going to kick things off with Andrew.
Yep, I have been reading Samurai Slasher Late Fees.
Isn't this one we got sent to us?
It is indeed one we got sent to us. So this is sort of related to a series that Mike Garley has done called The Samurai Slasher, which is like a throwback to 80s slasher films.
Okay.
But starring a samurai who is not a robot and has not been built by Baron Katana.
What about Silver Samurai? Is he like Silver Samurai?
He is much less silver. But also, do you know what this isn't like?
What?
The Samurai Slasher series.
Okay.
Because rather than being about the Samurai Slasher, it's actually a sort of semi-autobiographical tale.
Okay.
So it's about a boy growing up in England in what must be very long ago, because there's still a Blockbuster XP, by which I mean a shop called Shockbuster Videos.
Okay.
Remember video shops, Rob?
I remember video shops. I grew up with them, remember?
Yep, you were literally found in a box in, like, the romantic comedy section.
With a label saying, be kind, rewind.
So, yeah, this is a story about a young boy who, his parents are divorced, and on the weekends he stays with his dad. And one of the rituals they have is, like, renting videos and watching them together.
Okay.
So the story kicks off with, kind of, his father giving him his first taste of horror by renting the film The Samurai Slasher, which, like, is full-on just the most cheesy 80s horror film.
Yeah.
Even has the tagline, he's travelled a hell of a long way for one killer night.
Oh my God.
So yeah, they watch that, and the kid absolutely loves it. And then, like, that night he has a dream, which, like, the Samurai Slasher bequeaths him his katana, and so he becomes the Samurai Slasher.
So he becomes a serial killer?
No, not quite. Because in his dream, he's kind of offered the chance to fight monsters.
Okay.
And he kind of says, you know, after that night, I wasn't afraid anymore. I could protect us from them. I was finally strong enough.
All right.
And the idea is that, like, it provides him with a means of escapism throughout his life whenever something bad happens. Kind of retreats into this idea that, you know, he is the samurai slasher.
All right.
And he can fight all the demons and save the day.
Okay.
But as he's doing this, there's kind of a darker subtext to it all.
Okay.
That, because it's kind of saying that, like, throughout the years, he has to save his demons from a lot of, he has to save his dad from a lot of demons. And it kind of never quite elaborates on, like, what his father's problem is.
Okay.
Because then it, like, it goes back into this sort of semi-fantasy world of, his dad says that all the monsters think he has a magic pendant. And so they keep attacking him to try and get it when he doesn't have it. And so, the kid, he spends a lot of his years pulling his dad out of these situations.
Okay.
But then eventually the day comes when he's older, he's married now, and he has a child, and he comes to the realization that kind of every single battle he's fighting to help his father, that's putting his family at risk. And the day comes when he has to choose.
Okay.
And on that day, like, kind of in his mind, he discovers that his father actually does have the pendant that he says he doesn't have.
Okay.
And so he, like, he has to make the choice. And I love that, like, it says, some choices are easy to make, and some break your heart. And that was the last time I would ever see my dad alive.
Wow, that's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. And then it ends kind of with him, like, much later now, he's kind of in what looks like to be kind of his mid-30s.
Yeah.
And he has to suit up as the samurai to fight one last battle. But it's actually coming, like, to terms with the fact that his father's died in a hospital somewhere, and he never had a chance to say goodbye. And it just ends with saying, not every story has a happy ending.
See, this sounds really good.
It is. It's like, it's a really surprisingly emotional tale. Like, there's this whole thing that there's quite a strong implication that what all this, like, fighting monster stuff is really about is that his dad's an alcoholic. Because pretty much in every scene you see him in, his dad's holding onto a hip flask. And so the implication is kind of, over the years, his dad's kind of got into all this trouble because, you know, he's got blackout drunk and done some stupid stuff and needs his son to bail him out.
Yeah.
And it said, like, his dad battles with his demons all his life, but he can't beat them.
See, that sounds pretty amazing.
It surprised me a lot how, like, well, just what this story is and, like, how it's a very personal and emotional journey.
Do you know
what? Not something you'd expect from a thing called the Samurai Slasher.
Well, it isn't, but do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, you remember a few weeks ago, I talked about I Kill Giants?
Yeah, it's that same thing, kind of like blurring the line between what's real
and what's not. But they're doing it in order to cope with some kind of trauma in the real world, some kind of thing that they're just not mentally able to cope with in the real world. So they basically come up with this fantasy to help them deal with this stuff. In I Kill Giants, the main character was trying to cope with the fact that her mom was dying. And she was just upstairs in the same house. And so she basically had this idea, because she role-played a lot, that she was supposed to be there to protect the world from giants.
Yeah, so I think that the key difference is something like that. It's kind of more dangerous for the person who's losing themselves in this fantasy world.
Yeah.
As this, it's more clear that, yes, he still knows absolutely what's going on.
Yeah.
It's just this escapism. It's kind of just a tool that he uses to process things.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
But yeah. Very good comic.
Excellent. And who's that by?
That is by Mike Garley.
So, kudos, Mike Garley. That is surprisingly powerful stuff. Oh, right. I'm going to follow that up with Gwenpool, which seems inappropriate now, but there is kind of a link, I'll be honest. And it's weird for me to say that, but there is actually kind of a link between Gwenpool and Samurai Slasher Late Fees.
Is the link that she, like, juggles a bunch of clowns and it's hilarious?
No.
Because I feel we've got too serious, Rob.
Yeah, and the link is also not the fact that she uses swords as well, right? The link is more to do with getting things off your chest, right? Getting your emotions out, that sort of thing. Becoming more.
Okay, because I was going to say, I've got a lot I want to get off my chest.
Yes, I know.
And that joke was equally as funny as when I made it before the show.
No. See, Gwenpool has just gone through this arc, right? And the latest issue is kind of, it's pretty much the end of the arc. I think there may be a little bit of an epilogue to the arc, but I think it's pretty much at the end of the arc. And in this arc, you basically discover that Gwenpool has... The arc starts off with Gwen's brother finding her, and then they go home, and she, you know, she loses any abilities she has. She stops being a merc and an assassin type thing, and she's just basically a normal girl, right? And she's been convinced that she's that this is the real world. There's nothing special about her. Everything like that. Yeah. Basically, it's like a type of brainwashing. But at the end of that particular thing, she discovers that she's been tricked, and she discovers that she can tear through the fabric of reality, break the fourth wall like Deadpool can, right? And Deadpool's the one who actually gave the hint for that. Anyway, she can break the fourth wall. She discovers that the life that she had, the parents that she thought were her parents, aren't her parents. Her brother is real, but her parents aren't. And so everything that she's been living the last several weeks or so has actually been a lie in a comic book, right? And that there were people who wanted that to happen. And the people who wanted that to happen were the Doombot turned good guy, or turned good next door neighbor, who she fought in one of the issues. The lass with the helmet with all the eyes, who has become the Sorcerer Supreme or Sorceress Supreme in the future, and an adult version of Miles Morales Spider-Man who wants to kill Gwen. And this whole thing has come about because in the future, Gwen, using her powers, using her knowledge of everyone's secret identities and weaknesses, becomes the worst supervillain of all.
What? Even worse than Turnity Century?
Yep. Because she knows everyone's secret identities, so even the supervillains who have a secret identity can't stand up to her. And because she can break the fourth wall, she can basically jump around from one issue to the next. She can basically have knowledge of what's coming in issues later on and what's happened in issues past. So she can pick out your weaknesses and go around them. And so Gwen meets the future version of herself, who is evil. Basically, she is bad to the bone. But Gwen's not sure why she's ended up like that. And so Gwen's trying to understand why Miles Morales wants to kill her, why this evil version of Gwen killed Miles Morales' family in the future, why the Sorceress Supreme, who at the moment is one of her best friends, wants to basically kill her, why this Doombot, who actually became friends with her, you know, why he wants to kill her as well, why everybody's trying to kill her, and they're not. They just want to stop the future evil version of her from being a thing. And then what you have is this massive expositional rant by the evil version of Gwenpool, who has dragged Gwen into the space between dimensions where you have all the comic book panels. And she's talking about how they're in a comic book and it's being written by somebody and it's subject to fan votes and this and that and the other. And if, you know, and Gwen is being set up by the writers to become a bad guy. She is literally being set up like that, because the first thing that happened when she came to the New World, she ended up working for MODOK. She ended up killing people. She ended up doing this and that and the other. She is being set up to be a bad guy, no matter how much she wants to try and be the good guy. And that is all the writer's fault. And the writers are basically screwing her over. She's ultimately going to be the bad guy. And she, you know, and so when she realized that, because she can walk through the fourth wall, when she realized that, she thought, all right, screw the lot of you. I'm going to pull one over on all of you by getting rid of all of your heroes.
This is all very meta.
It is very, very meta. And this is the thing. This doesn't feel like the typical kind of comic book arc. This feels more like therapy. This feels more like Christopher Hastings isn't happy with certain decisions that have been made over at Marvel and is getting them off his chest in the form of a comic. It feels like he's got this idea of how Gwenpool should develop. He doesn't want her to be a bad guy, but maybe somebody over at Marvel has put forward this idea that Gwenpool could be an excellent bad guy, and he's saying no, he doesn't want that. So he's basically written her as a bad guy to stick a middle finger up at whoever's throwing around this idea that Gwenpool should be a bad guy. That's what this feels like to me.
Okay, that reminds me of a Fool Killer.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you've got a good point there.
No, just that idea of getting very meta into what's it like to like want to have things for your life, but sort of knowing that you're stuck in a meta narrative.
Yeah. That's literally what this is. It's, you know, evil Gwen is basically, she explains to, you know, younger Gwen that it doesn't matter what choices she makes, ultimately she's still subject to the executives or the decisions of executives who probably don't even read comics, the decisions of the writers and the editors, the decisions of the fans, popularity votes, things like that. She's subject to all of that, and they're all going to set her up to become a bad guy. And she should just accept it, because aside from being more fun being the bad guy, she's going to have a much longer run. If she stays as the good guy, they're going to cancel her within a few issues. And if Gwenpool gets cancelled in the next couple of issues, then we know why this issue exists.
That would be really meta, though, if, like, this is the thing that leads to Gwenpool getting cancelled.
I know. But yeah, the fourth wall breaking thing hasn't worked out the way I thought it was going to work out. They've took it down a completely different direction to how I imagined it was going to progress. I thought it was going to be like the typical Deadpool thing where it's used as kind of a way to bypass certain rules and to basically promote comedy. And they haven't done that at all. They've basically tried to do something a bit more serious with it and basically put forward this idea that, fans, writers, executives who don't read comics should basically let the writers write the comic they want.
Which I can certainly agree with when it comes to certain writers.
Yes.
Other writers should maybe just, like, have their writing utensils slapped out their hands.
Yes.
But that's something we're going to get to later.
Yes, it is.
Yep. So I've also been reading a Marvel series. I've been reading the first 6 issues of Thanos.
Ooh.
Which is a new series they've been doing. Spoiler alert, it's about Thanos.
Is it really?
No, I lied. You got me. But no, it is. So this is by Jeff Lemire with art by Mike Deodato.
He is getting around everywhere these days, isn't he?
He is. That Mike Deodato, willing to put his pen wherever it's wanted.
No, I was talking about Jeff Lemire.
Jeff Lemire too.
Thing is, it's like every second comic we seem to pick up these days is a Jeff Lemire comic.
It is. He's not fussy. And he's the kind of guy who doesn't even ask a character's name before he starts writing them.
I'm not even going to go there. I've got too much respect for him as a writer to make those jokes in public.
See, now I feel bad because I like Jeff Lemire's work. Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff.
Hey, that's why I said in public. I won't make those jokes in public, Jeff, so don't worry. In private, anything goes.
At least you're telling him to his face that you're going to talk about him behind his back.
Well, if he was here, I'd be making those jokes to him.
Hey, so Thanos.
Yes.
So, this picks up a bit after Civil War II, I think. Okay. Anyway, basically, the point is Thanos has been, like, out of the game for a little bit. And this is kind of him arriving back in the Black Quadrant, which is kind of where he's made his base of operations, to find that his lieutenant, Corvus Glaive, has decided that, you know, if Thanos is gone, I'm just going to take over. Which it's a pretty cool scene, where Thanos kind of just, like, bursts back into his throne room, and Corvus is all, "You forfeited this sector, it's mine now, Thanos, and I'm prepared to die for it." And then Thanos just says, "Yes, you are," and, like, proceeds to beat 7 bells out of him.
Wow.
And then offers him a choice. Either stab yourself with your own weapon, or I'll do the job for you. And if I do it, it's going to be long and excruciating. So yeah, he takes the first option.
Good call.
While that's going on, across the universe, a sort of intergalactic suicide squad is being formed to take down Thanos.
Okay.
You see, it's Thane, who is Thanos' son who was introduced a little while ago.
See, I always thought Thane was some type of lordship. I thought it was like Baron and Earl and stuff like that.
Yes, he is. This is Thanos' Fulton, Thane Broadsword. It's not really. I made that up.
I was going to say.
But now that I think about it, that's kind of a bad name.
It is. Thane Broadsword.
Thane wants to kill his dad. And to do that, he's got, like, an eclectic mix of characters. He's got Death, who is now, like, working with him instead of Thanos.
And so Death is working with Thane?
Yep, she's decided that for whatever reason she wants to get rid of Thanos. Then they're also joined by Nebula, because, you know, as Thanos' granddaughter, she's got a decent idea of, like, what his weaknesses are.
And Thanos' granddaughter or daughter?
Granddaughter.
Is she granddaughter now?
Well, actually, no. According to this, she's not really any relation to Thanos. That was just, like, a thing she told people to try and get more respect.
Okay.
But you know who is related to Thanos?
Who?
Everyone's favourite Avenger, Star Fox.
Oh, God.
Yep, he's back with his stupid popped collar and his discount ginger Wolverine hair.
Does he do a barrel roll?
Well then, Rob, you are literally the first person to ever make that joke.
I had to make the joke. Anytime anyone brings up Marvel's version of Star Fox, you have to make that joke. It's a rule.
But yeah, he's there. And also, you got the champion of the universe.
He-Man?
No, the big blue dude. What likes to wrestle.
Sorry, now I'm thinking Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan.
I mean, he is basically Space Hulk Hogan.
Space Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
I'm not picturing this guy.
You know, just imagine Hulk Hogan, but also he's blue. But yeah, he's part of the gang. And they've got this big scheme to break into, like, a facility owned by Terax, the former Herald of Galactus.
Okay.
And steal a mysterious weapon there. They'll help them take care of Thanos once and for all.
But he's got death on his side. All she has to do is go, Thanos, you're dead. Bye.
Well, funny you say that, because helping them on their way is the fact that Thanos is already dying.
So I don't understand why you need to break into Terax's secret lair to steal a weapon that can kill Thanos when he's already dying and you have death on your side.
You say that, but I actually like this because they're kind of aware of the comic book universe.
Okay.
But it's like, sure, Thanos is dying, but even if he does die, he'll probably find a way to come back. So the idea is they want something that's like properly going to take him out once and for all.
But that again brings up the question, why do you need to? Okay, if you want to stop him coming back, you just say to Death, could you put him in like a safety deposit box in the afterlife so that there's no way for him to come back? Just could you do that, please? And Death will go, okay, and then just, you know, give the key to Thane. So Thane has the key to his dad in a safety deposit box in the afterlife and his dad can't get out.
To fit, you said there seems to be a reason why it doesn't work like that. Because it seems like Death has got kind of a plan of her own. She's got something up her sleeves.
Is she wearing sleeves?
She isn't. She's wearing a very skimpy outfit. Also, I say she's wearing a skimpy outfit. Death in this is also in her attractive lady phase, not spooky skeleton phase.
I was going to say, the last thing you want is a skeleton in a skimpy outfit.
I mean, you say that I'd be into it.
Really?
It's like a weird skeleton seductively whispering into Thane's ear.
Oh. I can't follow that with anything.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's a pretty cool series, and I'm interested to see where it's going to go.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Also, the Shi'ar Imperial Guard show up.
Really?
Yeah, they have a fight with Thanos. And he loses, and then gets put in space prison.
And Thanos gets put into space prison?
Yes. For space crime.
Was it stealing a loaf of space bread?
Yep, but he just needed it to feed his space family.
But suddenly, he escapes from a space prison and goes to a space church where he meets a space priest who says to him, you don't need to steal, and gives him the silver. And he goes away and leads a better life. But they're still
and opens up a space mill.
Yeah, but they're still looking. You know, the Shi'ar Imperial Guard called, I don't know.
Look, that's just... His name is Space Javert.
Yeah, Space Javert. No. His name is Javelin because this is Marvel Comics. His name is Javelin and he is still looking for Prisoner 24601.
No, it's Space 24601, Rob.
Yeah.
Stay consistent.
Yeah, Space Prisoner 24601.
And then there's a big climax during the Space French Revolution.
Yes, he's looking for... Jean Thanos Jean.
I really want a scene of a gladiator just bursting into a room and saying, like, and I'm Gladiator!
Yes. I don't know why I suddenly went off on Les Miserables, but when you said space prison, it just led me there.
I don't know, but this is a beautiful destination we've arrived at.
Yes. Oh.
That make Nebula the woman who gets her hair shaved off.
Oh yeah, because she'll be like, because if she's the granddaughter and she's not related to him at all, she is actually Cosette.
Yes, the resemblance is uncanny.
this is starting to take shape, but we need to work on it more. I think. Oh. Anyway, leaving the beautiful
dream... Yes, please move on. We're in a strange destination, and I don't recognise any of the stops.
Leaving the beautiful dream to one side, let's head over to Marvel's Nightmare. And Marvel's Nightmare is, what if Captain America was actually a Nazi? He was actually Hydra, and the Nazis took over. Well, Hydra took over, because Hydra apparently aren't Nazis. Yes, they are. Marvel, you know, we recognise the goose stepping when we see it.
You know, I have one thing to say about Secret Empire.
What?
And that's that I dreamed a dream this book would be much better than the hell we're reading.
See, as soon as I saw Secret Empire was going to be a thing, I had this sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach that Marvel was setting themselves up for a fall. And oh my God, oh my God, this was... I think disappointing would be too calm a word, right? Marvel's big extravaganza, Secret Empire, following on from Civil War II, where they turned Captain Marvel into a fascist, has ended with a punch-up between Steve Rogers and Steve Rogers. The cosmic cube called Kobik is actually, apparently, she doesn't need to be complete as a cosmic cube to be a little girl who controls reality. She can have like 9/10 of her controlled by Steve Rogers, and that one little portion of her that's separate can actually alter reality reality with her own will, as long as she can reach out somehow and connect with the other bits. Yeah?
Oh, well, that's good to know that the rest of the series was an entire massive waste of time.
But the scars of the war still remain, and the other version of Steve Rogers, the Hydra version of Steve Rogers, still exists.
Why?
And gets rescued by Hydra. See, Kobik could have reset everything and brought everybody back to life, and apparently that's what the Hydra Steve Rogers wanted to do, was bring everyone back to life, including Natasha, who apparently isn't dead, but is dead, but isn't dead, including Rick Jones, who he executed because he wouldn't say Hail Hydra, and things like that, and people are scared of Captain America now, blah, blah, blah. It's all, you know, it's all this thing. This is the whole idea of Secret Empire. It was a nonsense. It was a joke. It was stupid. And the reason why it's stupid actually has to do with the... You remember that all-female superhero team that Marvel did?
What? Secret Empire is terrible because of A-Force.
Yep.
Explain the point.
Right. See, I didn't think about this until I finished reading Secret Empire. And I thought, hang on, so Kobik is a cosmic cube, and the whole thing on Pleasant Hill was because of Kobik, and then... Kobik is basically wandering around, apparently in pieces, and different people have different bits and pieces, but people will apparently remember when they were part of something greater. That's what the Hydra Steve Rogers believes. I think he believes that. But this is all setting up for some future storyline, I reckon. And, you know, when Hydra is resurgent again or something like that.
I reckon this entire thing's going to be forgotten about by this time next year.
Probably. But here's the thing, right? Marvel did Air Force, and Air Force had a particular character who could have basically circumvented all of this if she hadn't been forgotten, right? See, Kobik is a cosmic cube, yeah?
Yep.
Cosmic cube for this reality, yeah?
Yep.
Because apparently each reality has its own cosmic cube, if I remember the rules of the cosmic cubes correctly.
That sounds vaguely right.
Okay, but do you remember the Black Hole girl? The girl who was literally a sentient black hole?
Sort of.
She can travel from one dimension to another. So she's basically, she can travel the multiverse. She can also teleport to any destination in the universe. So the shield, also, she's a good friend of Captain Marvel, right? And also to get Civil War as well, right? She's a good friend of Captain Marvel, because Captain Marvel was part of Air Force, and so they're real good friends because of, you know, because Air Force was a tight-knit group and they all looked after this young girl who is basically a sentient black hole. And so Civil War could have been solved by her, just basically teleporting around going, nope, 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 nope. Secret Empire could have been solved by her, because when they put that shield around the world, Captain Marvel could have gone, here, you, my friend, could you teleport us all inside the shield, and she has the power to do that, because she's basically a transdimensional black hole.
I mean, you say that, but I could probably write you a list as long as several people's arms.
Yeah.
of characters who should have been able to sort this out in a second if they've actually got off their butts and bothered to do something.
Yeah, but that's my point.
Like, what happened to Starbrand? He was around a while.
Yeah, Starbrand was around a while. Apparently Quasar turns up after a bit. But this is my point. They had that one character. I mean, we're talking about a sentient black hole. It doesn't matter how powerful you are. I mean, even Thor doesn't go near a black hole because it pretty much consumes everything, doesn't it?
Seven.
Hey?
Seven. That is my answer.
It's a good answer. It's actually a better answer than I expected. But here's the thing. If you have a character like that and they're good friends with quite a lot of the characters who are fighting Hydra, right? Surely one of those characters would get in touch with their friend who is a sentient black hole and say, we're in trouble here, can you help out? She would have turned up and gone, ooh, Hydra, I'm going to spit you out on the other side of the universe.
I don't know, maybe she was stuck in space fighting the spooky space monsters.
I don't know, spooky space ghosts, yeah? Maybe, sentient black hole versus spooky space ghosts.
Alternatively, she's been put in the special hole with Adam X the Extreme
yeah.
and all the other characters that everyone's forgotten about.
This is the thing, though. She was only in Air Force, which was not that long ago. I think it was literally just before Civil War 2, and had a bit of an overlap
yeah,
with Civil War 2.
Yeah, but you say that. Who even remembers Civil War 2?
Well, I know Mick does.
Oh, poor Mick.
I know.
One day he's going to finish collecting all that, and then he's actually going to read it.
Yes.
And it's going to be very disappointing.
I know. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but Schadenfreude is at work here. We need one of the... Yeah?
Do you know my favourite bit of Secret Empire was?
What?
At the end when the heroes are all standing around going, yay, we did it, we came together as a team and we showed the world that heroes are great and we saved the world. When, like, they basically did nothing.
Yeah, they did nothing.
Like, their contribution to the story was getting their asses kicked and Captain America came along and socked a Nazi in the jaw.
Yes. And this is the thing that also bugs me. Aside from the new mutant homeland, New Tiana, whatever it is, and Wakanda, aside from those two places, the rest of the world was pretty much left alone.
And also seemed fairly nonplussed about the fact that literal Nazis have taken over America.
Yeah, the proof of that is the fact that they were helping Inhumans to escape to South America and Mexico. So the rest of the world wasn't being controlled by Hydra, just America, and to a degree Wakanda and New Tian. So, you see what I mean? So stupid.
Yeah, it just wasn't well written.
But, no,
what
I...
the point of Volta character literally vomiting up a bit of the cosmic cube?
Yeah, I beg to differ. I think it was... I think the writing had no problem. They could definitely make sentences.
Yeah, yes, that they were certainly capable of writing.
Yeah, I think that the actual...
He sure knows how to put some words in order.
Yeah, I think that the actual...
More words after that. More words. So many more words after it.
Yeah, I think...
There was hope, but then there wasn't hope, but then there was hope. And then we were all sad, but then we were happy, but then bad thing. And then everything was good in the end, hooray.
Yeah, I think that what this... there's two things about Secret Empire that stand out to me. As particularly bad. Number one is the thought process behind Secret Empire. Secret Empire literally reads like you have a bunch of people sitting around a table who know of these properties but don't actually read comics themselves, and they've decided that this would be a great idea. It's so cutting edge. It's something that's never been done before. And they're throwing out all of these, you know, corporate shill buzzwords and stuff like that. And they've convinced themselves that this is a good idea. Well, it's not. And that's how you end up with stories like Secret Empire, because you have, you know, people who run the business side of the company but aren't comic book fans getting involved in stories that they don't understand. They just think of the money side of things, the business side of things. But then on the flip side, you get stories written by the comic book fans that are just as bad because they don't know how to place limits on themselves, and so they go bigger and badder. They go bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and that's how you end up with after the Infinity Gauntlet, you had the Infinity War and the Infinity Crusade and stuff like that, because they just didn't know how to stop themselves.
You know what? I'm going to say it.
What?
Possibly the most offensive insult I've ever said to anyone ever. Nick Spencer is the Zack Snyder of comics.
Ooh. Ow. Ooh. Ouch. Even I felt
that. Yeah, that's
that.
Right. I said it.
Even I felt that. Oh, my God.
I think we're going to have to put an E for explicit on this one.
But I will say truer words, Andrew. But yeah, the second thing about Secret Empire, the second thing that really stands out as being particularly bad, right? And it's not the corporate shills or anything like that. It's just the fact that nobody questioned it. Nobody at Marvel actually put the hand up and said, are you sure this is a good idea?
I mean, what if they wanted to, but there's actually been like a secret coup in Marvel and all the dissenting writers have actually been locked in a closet?
Let me put it this way, right? Secret Empire, to me, is the comic book equivalent of the Inhumans TV series.
Oh, here we go. That was me worried we weren't going to fit Inhumans watching for this week.
Did you know, IMAX almost missed out on showing the new remake of It on IMAX because of the Inhumans TV series?
Oh, what a decision that would have been. Someone would have got fired for that.
Oh, yeah, someone would have definitely lost their job for that.
Someone would have got fired and sent to Baron Katana for punishment.
Yeah, because it has been doing amazingly well at the box office.
And Inhumans has not.
No. But yeah.
Like, have you seen the news that basically Inhumans might have killed the chances of any TV show getting an IMAX premiere?
Yes. And you know what? I'm fine with that.
Yeah, because TV shows are made for TV screens.
Yes.
Making them big doesn't work.
Yeah, making them loud doesn't work. Just because you have an IMAX.
Because I've heard that is one of like the big complaints of Inhumans, is that the special effects just in no way work on a big screen.
They don't work on a small screen either.
Yeah, I was going to say they look pretty bad just like in a YouTube window.
Exactly. And YouTube has crap compression when it comes to video. So, yeah. Secret Empire is literally the Inhumans TV series of comic books. It is that bad. I would honestly say, if you are a Marvel fan and you haven't read Secret Empire yet, avoid it like the plague.
Yeah, just don't, because, like, the thing is as well, it doesn't matter. Like, 6 months down the line, no one's going to be talking about Secret Empire.
I'm just waiting for you now, because you said it doesn't matter, and now your voice in my head sounds like The Rock. It doesn't matter. 6 months down the line, no one's going to remember this, if you smell
what... Admit, though. I do not want to smell what Marvel is cooking.
Exactly. And on that note, we are at the end of the show.
We are indeed.
Four Panel is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and we are on Audioboom, iTunes, and various other podcast providers of your choice. So if you're listening through on those, subscribe. We have a Patreon up and running. So if you are a regular listener, please show your support. The money that you donate will actually go to buying new equipment and keeping us making this quality content that you've enjoyed. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and various other places on the internet, or email us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And until next time, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
And we'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.